I've just started it now. Great. My name is Dave Weiner, and that's how you should identify me. Oh, you mean like what is my title? I don't have a title. A blogger and a software developer. Yeah, that's what I do. It's not very impressive, but that's what I do. Oh, that's sweet. Thank you. That's nice. Yeah. Well, let's see. We were in his hotel suite in New York City at the end of 2000. Actually, 2000. I was going to say 2001, but it was. Let me start that again. We were at his hotel suite in Manhattan in December 2001, and we were hanging out. Adam was using my blogging software, which was called Manila, and he was very enthusiastic about blogging, and he had this idea and about using the network for audio and video, and I wasn't really tuning into it. I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention because I had already been convinced that you really couldn't do audio and video on the internet because it was too slow, and whatever you would get would be very low quality and very short, and people had a short attention span, and it didn't really fit. Every time I tried to listen to audio or watch video on the internet, it was a very unsatisfying experience. But he had a really interesting idea, was that you could have a piece of software that subscribed to a feed basically of audio or video, and it would download the fresh stuff overnight, and then it would be sitting there waiting for you when you got in, and there wouldn't be any limit on the quality of the audio or the video. You could have it be as long as you want, and it could be as high density as you wanted, and he had to say it like eight times before it sunk in. I thought, well, that's actually a really interesting idea. That might work. And so then I went back to California, where I was living in California at the time, in Silicon Valley, and I decided to see what I to give it a try, to see what I could do with this idea. And we were already working on something called RSS, which was a way of doing a very similar idea for the blogs that we were writing at the time, and I thought, well, let's just see if we can add a feature to RSS that would allow it to handle media objects in addition to the text that we were sending over the wire with for our blog posts, and so I wrote a piece of software integrated actually with an existing piece of software we had that would do both sides of it, that would do the publishing of these audio feeds, and then do the listening to the audio feeds. Do basically the idea that we had talked about in New York a few weeks earlier, and so that was two sides of basically a three-sided puzzle. First you need software on both sides, and then you also need what we call content, which is a very sterile word for, basically the programming that we listen to, on our podcast. And so nobody, obviously, at that time, nobody was doing this. And so I looked around to see what I could find. It never occurred to me that I could do this myself. Although at some point in the future, I plan to do it because I was a very active blogger at the time. And so I used Grateful Dead songs because first of all, I like the Grateful Dead. And also they had a very liberal policy for allowing reuse of their music. And so I didn't think that they would mind if I created a sort of what we would call today a podcast of Grateful Dead music. And so that's what I did. And every day published another Grateful Dead song on this channel. And I had a lot of people, you know, that read my blog. My blog was very popular. And so all these people were getting a Grateful Dead song every day, which, you know, wasn't big news, right? Because we all had Grateful Dead songs. But that was sort of a proof of concept that the technology would work. And then I kind of hoped that once we demonstrated that all kinds of people would start, you know, doing this, you know, and then nothing happened. And so it sort of sat there for a little while. And but I was always looking for people who might do this. And a couple of years later, I became a research fellow at Harvard University, and I ran into a guy named Chris Lydon. And Chris was a public radio personality, and he was also a fellow at this place called Berkman Center at Harvard. And I told him the story about what we had built. And I don't think Chris really understood what I was talking about, except he thought it was a neat idea. And so we set it up so that he would do a program once a week where he would interview people who were the leading bloggers of the day. And so that was in 2003. And it was quite something. I mean, I would listen to his feed, and I would take it on walks throughout, you know, Cambridge and Newton, Massachusetts, where I lived. And everybody listened to it. But the thing that was missing was that people didn't get the idea that they could do it. And it didn't, because it was so beautifully produced, and it was. I mean, Chris had a producer working on it. He had an incredibly, you know, he basically did a public radio show. I mean, that's what it was. Nothing wrong with that, but it didn't get people to think that they could do it themselves. So, should I keep going? I really just one more step to the story, to the point where we sort of broke through on this and it became what it is today. So in June of 2004, what I had wanted all along was that it should be something that anybody could do, that it wouldn't require a lot of special expertise and a lot of hardware and a lot of, you know, very technical software. It just should be easy, right? And so I found a piece of software called Polderbits, and I had a PC laptop, and I just set it up, and this was on, I believe it was June 11th, 2004, and I set it up in my office, and I talked and recorded it, and then when it was done, I published it, and that was it. I started doing it regularly, and I went to the Democratic National Convention and interviewed people there. It was full of flaws, all kinds of glitches. There was dead sound for like 5 minutes on one of the podcasts because I forgot to flip a switch, and then I drove cross country and I did recorded sort of stream of consciousness stuff while I was driving. And the one thing that this did that the other experiments hadn't done was it made it very clear that anybody could do this, because I wasn't using the glossy production techniques that other people, that Chris had been doing prior to that. So a few weeks after I got started with it, Adam Curry started doing Daily Source Code. We started doing a podcast together called the Trade Secrets Podcast. And then by September of 2004, there were 20 or 30 of these. And that's when the name podcast became, that's when we chose the name podcast for it, was in September of 2004. And ever since then, it's just been growing. Every year it gets bigger and bigger. And it's been one of the most gratifying things imaginable, actually. So that's the end of my story. Sure, yeah. Right. Yes. Absolutely. That's exactly what I thought about it. The post that I wrote about Chris's podcast when it first came out was, I said, Chris Lydon's blog for the ears, weblog for the ears. We were calling them weblogs at the time, but very much so, exactly analogous to what we were doing with blogging. That and even though I think most of the podcasts people listen to today are professionally produced podcasts, the thing that comes along with it being for everybody is the fact that there are no gatekeepers and there's nobody controlling it and there's no barrier to entry. Anybody can do a podcast. So that's also a very important part of it, having it be easy to do, is that the technology for publishing them is also very lightweight, very easy and very simple and very hard to control. And that was very deliberate. You know, people don't ever really stop and think, is why is it that nobody has ever succeeded at dominating this thing? And it's because it was designed to be that way. Okay. Sure. Yeah, I guess. But I think that's how things happen with unlikely kinds of duos. Adam was a user of my software, and I have a religion of understanding the people who use my products. I listen to them. I very actively listen to them. I'm not always good at that because listening is hard. But I have made a choice and a decision that I want to understand what people are doing with my products, because the best ideas I've ever gotten from my products have come from the users of the products. It's that simple. And so, I don't think it's all that unusual, actually, because he's a creative guy and he was drawn to a platform that was created for creative people. And the same philosophy that was in podcasting was in the platform, which is called Frontier. Was designed to make it as easy as possible for people who were curious to learn how to do programming, you know? So, I don't know, you asked, how did we hook up? And that's it. That was how, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Well, yeah, that was my prejudice about, you know, I had prejudged, you know, audio and video. I said, well, there's just no way to do this. And that's that people fall into that pattern, you know, and I'm no different from everybody else, is that because I haven't figured out how it would work, I have come to a conclusion that was incorrect. The conclusion being it can't be done. But there was a way to do it, and it involved changing one of your assumptions. And it's a very fundamental approach to, you know, you look for ways around the barriers. And, right now, there are so many industries that are sort of stuck because they can't see their way around a barrier. But, I had prejudged it. I also had prejudged him, you know, because he's the MTV dude and he's very, I don't know how to say. He's like got a rock. He was staying at the Rockstar Hotel in Manhattan, and there were all these other famous rock stars there. You know, I mean, it was kind of like it was kind of a trip for me to be hanging out with people like that. But famous people are people too. You know, and he had an idea. I give him a ton of credit because he just didn't give up. I was blowing him off, saying, you know what, you're too. I mean, the sense is you just don't figure a guy that like that would ever have a good idea. You know, and there it was. No, because he's a rock star. I don't know how to say it, because he's glamorous, because he's beautiful, because, you know, people like that, you don't expect them to be smart too. And people shouldn't make that mistake. You should give everybody a chance to shine. And if ever there was a lesson of that, this is it, you know. Just listen. If somebody is very passionate with an idea and they say, this is something you really need to understand, try to understand it, you know. No, it would have worked with video. Totally would have worked with video, because it was all, because all the downloading was happening in the background. The content is there. You don't know about it until it's actually all there. So, it's about the user experience. It's about how you present it to the user. It doesn't matter. It could have been video too. I mean, you know, there's a big difference between audio and video, not just the size of the package. Audio activates your imagination in ways that video doesn't. Listening to a radio drama, I mean, that used to be some of my favorite things. That was one of my favorite things to do when I was a kid. You know, they had those on the radio when I was growing up. And now Gimlet, Gimlet? Gimlet, right? They have these great shows. I've just discovered them. They're wonderful. I mean, audio is wonderful. Audio also is much less expensive to produce. I mean, once you get into video, I mean, I'm sitting in in my office at home, and there's clutter all over the place. And, you know, if you wanted to do this by video, I'd have to be in a studio, or, you know, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe not in June of 2020. I wouldn't have to be in a studio, but it's different. Audio and video are different. Why did it happen with audio first? Yeah, I don't know, because we went with audio first. How about that? You know, I don't know. Yes, I love radio. I mean, I can create in radio. I've never felt I could create in video. I don't even know how to say it. You know, I would never sit down and record a TV show, but I record a podcast whenever I feel like doing it. It's very easy for me to do. So, It's a different experience. If you love radio, right? I mean, it is. It's not the same thing. It seems like, to a lot of programmers, though, it does seem like it's the same thing. Why wouldn't you do video? It's just better, right? I don't think so. Yeah. Well, it was derived from a feature in my blog. I still do it to this day. I mean, my day starts with a cup of coffee, and I sit down, and I go around, look and see what's happening on the net, and whatever seems interesting to me that I have something to say about, I just make notes on my blog and publish it. And once I was finished doing that and ready to go on to the next sort of stuff I was going to look at during the day, I would take all that and put it under a heading called Morning Coffee Notes, because that's what they were, literally. They were things that I had put together in the morning while I'm drinking coffee. And I'm not saying, you know, there's nothing earth-shaking about them. They're just some notes, you know. And I was being continuous. I was, you know, very much creating an audio version of my blog. And so for the people that were going to listen to it, especially at first, were people who were reading my blog. So calling it Morning Coffee Notes, well, this is something they're already very familiar with. And so I wouldn't have to explain what this is, even though it was surprising to a lot of people. I mean, one of the things that was surprising was people were surprised that I sound friendly, you know, because they had never heard my voice before. You know, these people were reading my blog, and for some cases for years, and in their mind, I was always angry, you know, but I'm not. You know, I'm curious. I'm not angry. So it's kind of like, you know, when you listen to a radio show, like when I was a kid, I was listening to radio. You get to know the DJ and they have a personality, and you develop a visual image of who they are. And then you actually see what they look like and go, no, that's not what he looks like. You know, it's same sort of thing happened there, you know, so. That's right. They're your pictures, though. That's the thing. That's what I say. It's like activates your imagination. That's exactly what it is. It's like that, in a way, you're right. That isn't what, you know, Cousin Brucey looks like, or Scott Muni, or, you know, Jonathan Schwartz, or, you know, I mean, they had all these personalities. You know, my version of what they look like happens to be the correct version, even if that isn't what the person actually looks like, right? Because it's my program. I've made it my... That's what art is about. No matter what your medium is, art is the reflection of what the artist created off of an individual, and that's the actual art. So it's perfectly valid, and that's what's so beautiful about, you know, audio. Yeah. Well, I never felt I needed to do something different personally. I mean, to this day, my podcasts are basically audio blog posts. They're very much related to what I do on my blog. But I could see as soon as September of 2004 that it was going off in a lot of different directions. And it was... not most people weren't going to see it that way, and so we felt we needed to call it something else. And I mean, another very important thing that happened in that same period was NPR came on board. A guy named Tony Khan, who was at WGBH and a very influential person in the public radio world in the United States, became a complete evangelist for podcasting. And as a result, early in 2005, we started getting, you know, NPR shows showing up on this medium. They weren't doing blogs. I mean, you know, the professional publishing world has never really understood what the differences between blogs and what they do are, but there is a world of difference. It became something else, which is fine. It's great. I mean, it's... You mean podcasts, right? You said blogs, but you mean podcasts. Yes. I mean, NPR is sort of the anchor for the whole world. I mean, they... you know, today NPR could stop doing podcasts and it would be okay. The podcasting world would continue to function. But that wasn't true for a very long period of time. They were the anchor, you know, Fresh Air and, Fresh Air was the big one for me. And, yeah. But the daily podcast that the New York Times does, that was seminal, absolutely made a huge deal in, the development of the medium. And I don't know, it's so huge now, and your ability to, I mean, one person just can't listen to that much, right? I mean, you know, it's only so many I mean, how many hours a day can you spend listening to podcasts? So the world is just infinite in size. Yeah, and a lot of them have very large audiences. It's really remarkable. I mean, well, I'm eternally proud of podcasting. I mean, I can't believe all the places it's gone. And, you know, I hear them talk about it on TV and, you know, podcasts. I mean, podcasting's just gotten so huge. And it's very gratifying to have, you know, I can say, well, you know, that was something that I started. It's a, you know, it really does give me a tremendous amount of pride. But I don't see them as separate things, really. I mean, it's a continuum. That's how technological, I mean, since that's what you guys do with your show, I mean, you're talking about how technologies develop, and it's a continuum. It's a bootstrap. It starts off being one thing, and then you realize, oh no, it's something else entirely, you know, because if you stay attentive and you see how people are using it, you know, everybody gets a shot at defining it, you know. There was the 1619 podcast from the Times. I thought that was awesome. It taught me so much. It was a very short podcast, but I came away with a whole different impression of American history and, you know, when things actually happened, you know. It's perspectives. Yes, I don't know. I can't say one is greater than the other. They're very much tied together for me, the same thing, really. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I think it's one way of looking at it. I don't look at it that way. I mean, there certainly is a lot of what he's talking about there. I mean, there's no doubt that there are a lot of different companies, very big companies, that whose plan is to dominate. And, you know, I've been involved in technology since the mid-70s. So, you know, I've been through a lot of cycles in the technology world. And so I've seen this happen in many, many contexts where a technology matures and a big company comes along and figures they're going to dominate it for whatever reason they feel that there's a good chance of that happening. But it hasn't really happened here, has it? I mean, you know, and I don't think that even if all that you just described were to fail, I would still be able to do a podcast for the people who read my blog. So I will still have what I want, you know? I mean, I want it from two sides. I want it to... I want to be able to, sometimes an idea needs to be done in voice. It's not good enough just to write it. You have to actually explain it in words. So I need to be able to do that. And I want to go on a bike ride and listen to a podcast. And as long as I can do that, I'm happy. I don't care. I mean, you know, my vision really here wasn't for an industry. It wasn't for anybody's livelihood. I think it's ridiculous that people think that a technology has to provide them with a livelihood. It never made that promise. It was never a debt that it incurred. It wasn't. We didn't raise money on the promise that we would create a living for anybody in particular, or anybody at all. This wasn't designed to be that. So they can go ahead and succeed or fail. It's fine. But I don't think it makes a difference, really. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. go ahead, have fun, make money. I mean, you know, people talk to me about this stuff as if I were some kind of a CEO of a company that was going to go out of business if podcasting goes out of business. Like, I should be very sad, or I should throw FUD at them, or I should bluster and tell them, well, that's never going to happen because we have this trick up our sleeve or whatever. But that's not reality. I didn't start a company around this. I don't lose any money or make any money off of this. I don't, you know, it's not like that for me. And it's weird how people only seem to have that mode, that one mode, that if this thing is in what we think it's in trouble, therefore you should be freaking out and telling us why it's not in trouble. And I say, no, I mean, actually, why don't you tell me why it's not in trouble? Because you own it as much as I do. I don't own it. I won't lose any money if podcasting were to die, even though it's a ridiculous idea. Podcasting was never alive, so it couldn't die. I mean, these people make up these stories that just don't make any sense, you know? You say, well, do you think podcasting's going to die? No, podcasting was never alive. It's not going to die. Can't die. Yeah. No, I won't do that. I won't do that. No, he's not going to succeed. That's the difference. I mean, he can go ahead and flail against whatever it is he's flailing against, and it's not going to make any difference. He's been doing that for a very long time, you know, and it hasn't changed a thing. And the web is still useful. I mean, the thing, you know, what I would say to Tim Berners-Lee is like, you're picking the wrong target here. You should be talking about Google. Google is trying to own the web. And that's very dangerous. That is dangerous, and that should be stopped. And if Tim Berners-Lee applied himself to that, he could stop that. He could focus our attention on the fact that Google is up to no good with their attempts to try to own the web. They're going to try to turn it into a corporate platform, and that's not good for us, for all of us. And I would totally work with him on that, you know. But I don't see that happening with podcasts. That hasn't happened. If Google were to try to close off podcasting, I would say something. I would say, no, that's not a good thing, and we shouldn't do that. I would say that, but they may be trying to do it, but they have no chance of succeeding at it. So it's not worth even talking about. Right, right. Right, but which ones? I've never listened to Joe Rogan. I don't find that appealing. I'm not interested. Maybe that's why I have trouble getting excited about this, because Joe Rogan isn't my kind of podcast. I've listened to it enough to know that it isn't what it isn't my cup of tea. So, I mean, sure. I mean, maybe a lot of people will be disappointed, or I don't know. I don't think they should call those things podcasts, by the way. That would be my one objection, because they aren't. I mean, a podcast is something very specific, and they're hijacking a term, and they shouldn't do that. I would say that, but it's the feed, it's the choice, it's the freedom that you have to get the content however you want. You know how at the end of podcasts they say, subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, right? I mean, that's like a piece of boilerplate. You hear it everywhere. That tells you that the medium hasn't been owned yet. And it's amazing how long it's survived that way. Now, I listened to Gimlet stuff, and they were acquired by Spotify. And so, okay, I see that, you know, okay, there's Spotify, okay? But I can still listen to their podcast, so I don't see. And I don't think they're ever going to, I mean, maybe they'll put some content exclusive on their medium. I guess that's what people are worried about, right? Something's going to be exclusive in there. Well, as long as it's just Joe Rogan, do whatever you want. I don't care. I'm telling you, I don't care. I mean, but maybe I'm Maybe I'm missing the point, but I really don't, doesn't bother me. It's a feed. It's an RSS feed with enclosures that I can write software for that downloads that and presents it to the user however I want to do it. It makes it open to innovation. Nobody needs permission to publish a podcast. You don't have the equivalent of Apple. If you want to write a piece of software for an iPhone, you have to get Apple's approval. You have to get it constantly. And they can change their mind anytime they want and say, without any explanation, say, I'm sorry, you can't do this anymore. There's nobody there for podcasting. Nobody can say that to you. So, I don't know. No, they never will, as if they stick to what a podcast is. If they start using the term for something other than that, then, you know, but you're playing that's sort of a funny game, right? If I told you men could have babies, you'd go, what? Right? I mean, because men don't have the equipment to have babies. But suppose I decided that men, I'm going to use the word man to talk about people who can have babies. Then, you could do anything, right? Then the word no longer means anything. So if you change what a podcast is, then yeah, you could totally screw it up. But you shouldn't do that. I mean, it's not really a very nice thing to do. Well, I have other things to worry about. I don't want to get the coronavirus. That's a bit higher priority for me, you know. And it should be for everybody else, too. We've got a lot of problems in this world. There are 40 million Americans out of work right now. And, you know, it's like in that context, no, I don't worry about it. You know, I've gotten a lot of pleasure out of it. I mean, that is a good place to end, I guess. Well, let me just add this. I've got a ton of pleasure out of it. It's enriched my life. Sometimes things come to an end. And if that should happen here, I think I'll come to an end before it does, though, honestly. Right. I think so. I mean, you know, I suppose if there are evil people in the world that really don't want me to listen to a podcast, they could probably make it so I can't. But why would they want to do that? I don't know, whatever. Yeah. Right. Right. That's right. And that is exactly my motivation. You know, I just want to add that I did quite well in the software world in the 80s. And I even made a fair amount of money in the 90s. And I've invested well. I'm not bragging or anything. But at some point, you don't need to think about money. I don't know why people who are very rich are motivated to make more money, because it's not going to add any value to their lives, you know. And so I feel that something like this, I didn't take a vow of poverty or anything remotely like that, but it's just, there are all kinds of rewards in life. And I think this has been an extremely rewarding thing to have done. So, oh, my pleasure. Thanks for listening. Yeah. Oh, really? When were you there? Yeah, we were. I was a computer science grad student on West Dayton Street. It's hung out at Union South. Well, I went and hung out at the other Union, too. Yeah. Maybe you should have. Maybe we would have invented podcasting. Maybe we would have invented podcasting in the early 80s, you know? All right. Oh, I didn't know. I had no idea. I'll send you the... Sorry? Yeah, me too.